Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And you would be on an October 12th, 2017.
That's
pretty
right.
Beautiful day here in Los Angeles. Right?
Another beautiful day. We've had a good week.
Yeah, well, you have a good day every day.
That is not true.
That is
I have
true.
Two children, and anytime I have a good day, it's a rarity. So,
two children, a beautiful wife, a Broadway performer, and you live in Malibu.
Well,
what is wrong with that picture?
I tell you, I'll take this day.
I'm not there. My house is not there.
Well, you're here now, Michael. It's great to see you. How you been?
I'm pretty good. Well, you know, I have my thing.
I know you have your thing.
I have a lower back problem with a disc that is pinching. As I'm sitting here smiling at you guys, this disc is pinching the sciatic nerve on the right side of my body.
I told you not to squat over 500 pounds, Michael. Every time you do that, you hurt your back, man.
You
it's
go.
When you go to the big weights.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
well, obviously,
but it's getting better.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm
you
starting
look great,
some physical
man. I'm
therapy.
Glad you're doing okay.
Coming up this coming week, and yeah, it should all be good.
You have some experience with a possible MRI, correct?
I think I'm going to do that.
That's great.
I have found, everybody should know about this, if you need to have an MRI, I'm claustrophobic, and I think most people, even if they're not claustrophobic, it's no fun because it's just
it's true.
This one, and there's only two of them in all of Southern California. One happens to be right down the street, and it is vertical. It is completely open. You stand up, or it can even sit in it, and it takes the images from the back. So
such a great thing.
Yeah, it is. And it takes 15 minutes as opposed to 50 minutes.
Oh, so much nicer. Oh, well, Michael, we certainly wish you the best on that. I'm glad you're doing okay, and you certainly look good, as you always do, as you sit across from me here today.
It's the lighting. Maybe not in this case, but I don't know.
Well, as you said, here we are on October 12th, and we have a big show today.
We do.
No promises, Michael, but I may smash a grapefruit in your face today. That's right, my friend. I might do it because we are joined by a pair of remarkable talents who are performing at the El Portal Theater here in North Hollywood in the new musical Cagney.
That's right. Would you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Robert Creighton and Freddie Kimmel to the show.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Welcome, welcome.
Lovely to have you here.
Thanks. Oh. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
We even got a cheer. That was nice.
Well, you guys brought your own audience. That was nice. So, I tell you, what a cool project you guys have going on based on the life of the amazing Jimmy Cagney, correct?
Incredible to be doing it here, right where the legend was born. It's amazing. And he really did live a life that warranted creating a show about it.
You
know, there are very few people who fall into that category. And he still... You know, what's interesting in doing it, what we found is he was one of the biggest box office draws of his time and the biggest movie stars of all time. There are still legions of Cagney fans around. I mean, there are Facebook groups devoted to every detail of his film career, of his life, of his homes. I mean, you name it. There are still rabid Cagney fans, and it's so fun to be able to do our part in bringing his story back today and have people learning about him. It's pretty incredible.
And I think I saw an interview that you gave to someone. You were talking about little nuggets that you put into your performance that only people who are really Cagney fans would know.
For the DVD, right?
It's really, I've had great fun doing that. Like things that are just little quirks that were unique to him. And he always said with every character, you know, he played a lot of the same type of character, which frustrated him a lot, but you know, Jack Warner was making money off these types of characters that he was doing. It was very popular, but in each one he tried to leave a unique little character detail. And most of them were, you know, were born of people he knew growing up on the streets of New York or people he came in contact with. And so I have real fun fleshing out the minutiae of my character with those little details, like the, you know, the little hand on the chin, you know, where he relocates the face and the hitches and the little thing, you know, just fun little things.
Well, you absolutely poured yourself into a skin because it was amazing. It really was something special to watch. And obviously, we're going to be back to talk a little more. We got to pay some bills first. Will you both hang around?
Come on.
All right. We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back and talk about this. We should thank our sponsors, Michael.
Absolutely. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, that's right. Obviously great.
We encourage you to visit Breakdown Services and Performing Arts Live to find out more about all of the happenings in the Southland.
That's right. Two great resources, Michael, to be sure. And now, before we get back to Cagney the Musical, tell us a little bit about your week. And
My week.
I know you saw some amazing theater. I was with you.
Yes, you were. I'm the other piece of amazing theater that is on the boards this weekend at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center is something that I'm representing for publicity, public relations, and had on Good Day LA this morning.
Of course.
And it is Young Frankenstein, the
musical.
Oh,
my goodness.
And it's just killing.
Be normal. Don't get me started.
We've got an understudy ready to go, man. I'm telling you.
Played Igor a couple summers ago. It was very fun. Abby normal.
I think 2 minutes more, and I'm going to have to start paying royalties
on
this the whole show.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Well, we had a performance this morning.
This way.
Sorry. Okay. Go on.
Love it. Now, Michael, this show is going up in Redondo. Are they doing two locations again, as they usually do?
Yes. We moved the show to the Cerritos, the beautiful Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts in Cerritos.
Happily named.
This show at Redondo closes on the 15th,
of course.
And we reopen on the 20th of October and play through the 29th. And it's such a fun show. I'm sure you've seen it.
Have you ever done it?
That's why I played Igor a few summers ago in Maine, and it was the most fun being that stupid
part
on stage.
The opening number they did on the morning news was the opening number in the show between the two of them.
Uh-huh.
Between Frankenstein and Igor.
Frankenstein! Yeah. It's not a Stein, it's a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny. I've got a friend who I joke with him about that. But that show is always such a wonderful, refreshing show to watch. Great music and amazing character roles. You really feel for these absurd characters. And you love, you know, when you walk out of that theater, you feel so good about that ending.
And it's so beautifully produced by 3D Theatricals. And 3D Theatricals, it stands for three siblings whose last name is Dawson.
Ah.
And they are very passionate. They are beautiful performers, but they're also very business savvy. And they are producing
good
Broadway caliber theater at these major venues in town. So.
Now, Michael, how can people get tickets to go see Young
3dtheatricals.org. Very good. Simple. Good online. They have a beautiful website. You can buy them right on the website. And again, through the 15th and the 20th through the 29th at the Cerrito Center for the Performing.
We have a couple great friends of the show in that show too, don't we?
We do.
So it's obviously a great chance. We'd love to get you down there to see that show. But we have another show, Michael, that we should mention here as well. The show
course.
That we had the two gentlemen here talking about today. And we should give them their proper due, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Our first guest has performed throughout Canada and the United States, from summer stock to the Broadway stage. Some of his favorite roles include Peter Pan in Peter Pan, the Artful Dodger in Oliver, and Eddie Ryan in Funny Girl.
He appeared as...
I'm curious where you got the bio stuff. That's good. That's all 24 years old. Exactly. Yeah, done 7 Broadway shows since then. But I loved Peter Pan when I was 22 years old. That's great.
We do our research.
That's
you guys
right.
are digging deep.
He
man.
Appeared as Nicely in Guys and Dolls at the Paper Mill Playhouse, Og in Finian's Rainbow at Goodspeed,
97.
And Tobias in Sweeney Todd at St. Louis Reps,
98.
Moving up.
This is good.
He enjoyed 2 seasons with New York City Opera, where he played Goody King in the original North American Tour of Fame, and was part of the original Lion King company in Toronto and subsequently in Los Angeles.
In 2003, as we break into
Love
a new
to hear
decade,
8 months
he
in LA.
Was cast in the first Broadway show in his first Broadway show, Laughing Room Only, which began a series of Broadway shows for him, including Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Bang, The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, Chicago, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, Chicago, and Anything Goes. He has had guest starring roles on Law & Order, NBC's Life on Mars, ABC's The Family, and he maintained an extensive voiceover career.
He was the recipient of a 2014 Bistro Award as Outstanding Entertainer for his New York cabaret, Ain't We Got Fun. His debut album of the same name is on the LML Music label. He is currently appearing as James Cagney in the show that he conceived and co-authored, Cagney the Musical. And we are so happy to have him with us here today. Please welcome one more time, ladies and gentlemen, the extraordinarily talented Robert Creighton.
As the audience goes wild.
Exactly. I love Hollywood.
Man, oh,
I love it here. You,
hey,
get
you can't hide anything from us, brother. If you did something when you were 12,
I'm
not
finding
that.
I'm sorry, because I had an interview the other day on TV where he asked me about my training from some, but I had no idea what he was talking about.
So wow.
It was, my bio has gone back a while. That's good. That was fun. That was like memory lane. I loved it.
Well, I got to tell you, it is amazing because you started when you were fairly young, but your Broadway debut was really, I mean, it launched a new phase of your career.
Yeah.
And television as well. You've been very active in television.
Yeah, it took me, you know what? It's when I talk to young people who ask advice or how do you, it took me 10 years out of acting school to get my first Broadway show, and that was the goal and the dream. And I was lucky. I mean, I worked New York City Opera. I did a couple seasons there and Lion King in Toronto, so that was like Broadway, but hard to crack that nut. And then finally, yes, I was very fortunate when the first one came, it sort of broke the seal, and there's been several since. And actually, I just literally finished a week and a half ago the out-of-town run of Frozen in Denver.
That's right.
I'm playing the funny bad guy in Disney's new
Broadway show. Be careful. My daughters will come and ask you for your autograph. That's a favorite.
And arrived here on the Monday and started Cagney on Thursday.
My goodness.
Aren't you going into the show on Broadway?
Yeah, Frozen? So we all moved. Yeah. They're just moving the set back now, and then we start again. We open in February on Broadway in that month. So just a little show, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, obviously, Cagney is an undertaking, and you personified him amazingly well. What was the process as you began to watch his films, obviously, but finding out about the man? What were your greatest resources?
Yeah, it's the whole scenario started. I was in acting school in New York, and a teacher said, "You remind me of Jimmy Cagney." And he said, "You should watch his films. I think you'd really connect to him and like them." And I knew kind of Yankee Doodle Dandy, but that's it. And I started watching his films, Public Enemy and Angels with Dirty Faces and Roaring Twenties and White Heat and Love Me or Leave Me, and became sort of obsessed with how he was on film. I thought he was so mesmerizing and unique in his physicality and everything. And I did instantly sort of feel connected to him, which was, I was like, wow, I do sort of look a bit like him. Yeah. And I do, and he was sort of a, you know, as I started reading about his life, he was a guy who liked sports and baseball and grew up fighting on the streets, although I didn't do that. But you know, kind of a guy's guy, but his favorite thing to do was sing and dance. And I felt like that was, you know, that was sort of my journey. I always wanted to, my two dreams as a kid were to be first the goalie for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the NHL. Like, that was my first big dream, which obviously looking at me would never happen. But I was passionate about it. And my second dream was to be on Broadway. Sort of, I grew up in a small town in Canada, in Ontario. But then I started reading about how he went through the world. I started reading about, and if you come to the show, you see a lot of that. Like, he didn't like bullies. He stuck up for himself, was one of the founding members of SAG, which helped himself and a lot of actors around him.
And that was something I did not know, which I learned yesterday.
Yeah. In fact, I want to go to this. I haven't been there, but they have a whole, you know, area named after him at the SAG offices because he was one of the guys. And I've learned even more, a lot of stuff that isn't in the show, about that journey, about how the intimidation that the studios put on actors to sort of break it up.
Yeah.
But he, as you do here in the film, he was still under the 7-year contract making $420 a week, and his films were pulling in millions of dollars. And in 1936, he walked out of his contract, said, "This is not fair," and left and went to Martha's Vineyard for a year.
Right.
Total legal battle, and came back with script approval. But I just became sort of passionate about, and because of the richness of his vaudeville roots and the song and dance, and that's what I loved.
And he was a bridge between vaudeville and screen. I mean, he was one of the first performers to really start in vaudeville and then transfer film successfully, which is remarkable and so important. Yeah.
I think that it's rather common knowledge about Jack Warner, though. He was not a very liked person in the business, and everybody had the same problems with him. All of his stars have the same problems.
But Cagney stood up to him in a way that I think some
definitely
didn't.
Yeah. But in that recent television series that was on between between...
Yeah, Feud.
Yes, Feud.
Of course.
You see that, absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. My dear friend, one of the main reasons she helped us bring the show to L.A., Kate Edelman Johnson, and she's become a dear friend, and her father was Louis F. Edelman, who was writer of 13 of Cagney's films and producer for Jack Warner.
Wow.
And the first time she saw the show and talked to Bruce Sabbath, who plays R. Warner brilliantly, she said, "You made him nice." Meaning,
wow,
as bad as he is in our show.
Yeah, because he's rough in the show.
It was mild compared to the real thing.
Unfortunately, that's still going on these days. So.
Oh my gosh, let's not start on that.
But it's interesting when you look at the relationship between Warner and his stars and the fact that he was trying to protect the studio system, which was a great thing at the beginning, but by the end, it absolutely took advantage of actors.
Yeah.
And Cagney really was coming from a rough background. He was one of the first people to stand up to Jack Warner and say, "It's not going to happen. You're not going to take advantage of me." And I think that courage from a little guy standing up to Jack Warner, one of the biggest men in the industry, other people had the courage to say, we can step out on our own. And you saw actors creating their own studios, some successfully, some not. But the idea that they broke that barrier was unusual.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I really admire, that's one of the things I really admired about him. And I think it's one of the things that makes the show, even if you don't know who James Cagney was, a lot of young people come to the show now, you know, might not have seen a lot of his films. Or don't even know at all who he is.
Right.
It's a different time. However, it's a story about a guy that you can engage with because he stood up to the man and started with nothing and became this and risked it because of what was right. And so that's one of the fun things that I've learned, especially through our 14-month run in New York. Two things. One, the hallmark of our show is that people leave uplifted. They leave sort of inspired and happy, you know, about the whole thing. And secondly, people who never knew who he was come and engage in the story and go, "Oh my gosh, I want to go and watch his movies now.
Right.
I want to learn more about this man." And that makes me really happy because obviously I'm a fan.
Right.
That's how this whole thing started, right? So it feels good. That part feels really good.
That's great. Well, the show is called Cagney the Musical, and of course it's playing through October 29th at the El Portal Theater. Regular performance schedule, it's October 5th through the 8th, which of course has already passed, and then October 10th through the 15th, Tuesday, 7:30, Wednesday, 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Thursday, 8 p.m., Friday 2 p.m. and Sunday 2 p.m. And then the 17th through the 29th, there's Tuesday shows at 7:30, Wednesday at 8 p.m., Thursday at 8 p.m., Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday, Sunday 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sunday 3 p.m. But ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to remember all that because the easy way to get tickets is just go ahead and call the easiest place to get tickets at 866-811-4111.
Or go to CagneyTheMusical.com.
And, of course, if you haven't been to the El Portal Theater, it's located at 5269 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood, right across from one of our favorite places to get a bite to eat and maybe a little libation,
and
the Federal Bar and
Grill. Yeah, we had our opening night party there. They were so nice to us.
In my place, you did.
I love it.
That's my place upstairs.
It is?
Yeah.
Meaning,
Sterling's upstairs at the Federal.
Is that where they do the jazz and stuff,
It
too?
Is. That's where I present Broadway performers in concert.
And, I want to come back there and do that.
You be careful. That's contractually obligated now. You said it on the air, man.
I was going to tell you, too, we have a place called Cagney, a website, Cagney the Musical.
Okay.
And if you want to go and see clips of the show and read reviews and interviews, and that also has a link right to buy tickets. It's right at the top. Boom, buy tickets.
CagneyTheMusical.com?
CagneyTheMusical.com.
I just gave that out.
Great. Yeah. Well, one of the other things I loved about this was when I walked into the lobby, Michael, did you see the display they had set up with Cagney's own paintings and everything? This man, obviously a great actor, and I remember as an actor because I think watching him as an actor, it changed the way I looked at him. Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, those guys defined the kind of acting style on film that I love to this day. But his tap dancing, his painting, everything, he was an artist through and through. And he learned how to fight at an early age and still kept that artistic mentality.
If you want, the best book to read about Cagney, in my opinion, is Cagney on Cagney, his autobiography. And the first 45 pages are all about the street, you know, like him sticking up for his brothers, and he broke his hand in a fight. And his mother says, after it healed, she took him, knocked on the door of the other kid, and said, "Come on out, we're going to finish the fight." Like, stuff like that.
Things that wouldn't work with my 7-year-old.
But exactly. But that's what he That's where he started. And then he had an uncle, took him to the country. He spent 2 weeks in the country and instantly fell in love. And that's where his soul, his heart wanted to be. And his work ultimately provided him having a farm upstate and a home in Martha's Vineyard.
Wow.
And he quit acting in 1963 after 1, 2, 3. He was in Germany in a soundstage making a film. It was dark. It was the first time he ever struggled with he had pages of dialogue. If you've seen that movie where he's got six phones,
talks a lot,
and he's shouting, "Do this, do that." They're trying to. Anyway, he's got a page of dialogue, and he walked out of the studio and said, "What am I doing here? I want to be on my farm." And he went and raised his horses and painted for 20 years until the doctor said, "You need to go back to work. You're sitting around too much." And he made Ragtime with Milos Forman in 1983.
Amazing.
But his art, we have some of his original paintings in the lobby.
And they're fascinating. And they're really good.
They're amazing. And I said to my friend Kate, who organized that, I said, "I hope the insurance is good, because one of those is going to be on my trunk." And the way out of here, that is definitely on my – that's on my bucket list, owning a Cagney painting. I'm just – I'm in Hollywood, and I'm saying that out loud on the air.
So right, just to get it out there.
With things, you know, I don't know what to do with this, and we should – it should have a good home with someone who would truly appreciate it for the rest of their life. I'm the guy.
Well, obviously, he was a traditional realist painter, and I thought it was whimsical and fun, but I also thought it had a lot of heart, his paintings. And
they do.
That was something
like
I hadn't known.
There's something now, in the news recently, not about Mr. Cagney, but about a very famous portrait of Christ that was thought to be...
Lost
or stolen, or just not in existence anymore.
Wow.
And but it's by a very famous painter. I cannot remember the name. Did you see the news?
This is a Renaissance painter?
Yeah. And it, you know, they documented it, and they found there's $100 million it's going up. That's
what?
Its opening bid.
Yeah. Good Lord.
At Sotheby's.
I just don't want to pay the insurance on it, really, is my whole thing. That's why I don't buy it. I think we should hear a little bit of the man, the myth, the legend, yeah?
I think
this
so.
This is Yankee Doodle Dandy, James Cagney.
I'm the kid that's all the candy. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm glad I am.
That's good.
I'm a real-life Yankee Doodle, made my name and fame and boodle, just as Mr. Doodle did, by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain, I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't a charge, she's a Yankee, by gosh! Anything about a Yankee, that's awful.
What an unusual style of voice he had.
That's so
that
great,
Irish
isn't
lilt,
it?
You know, what
I
a
know.
Great thing. And yet, through and through American. You don't ever think of him as Irish. You always think of him as American, mm-hmm. but definitely that Irish influence, which I love so much in his performances.
It's interesting. When I first started on this journey, I would literally stand in front of that with my VHS tape and rewind and do all his... I could do every arm, like I could do the whole number, his legs, his arms, the way he walked across. although I don't, you know, do you want me to keep talking or you want to keep playing that?
No,
I'm sorry.
I'm loving this. This is fantastic.
But you know, when he played George M. Cohan, who, you know, in Yankee Doodle Dandy, he was asked, "Are you going to imitate Cohan?" Because, of course, he grew up, you know, he was only whatever he was, 20 years or 15 years young, born after Cohan. So he saw him, you know.
Right.
He said, "No, I don't believe in imitation, because then you can only do what they did. It limits your creativity. If you're imitating them, you can only imitate what they did."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You take their essence and then you play it for real." And so when I...
Well, now, hold on. This has to be an allegory for your performance,
of course.
Which is exactly what you did.
What I'm saying is took his... I made a conscious choice to take his advice, to... try and capture the essence, and I watched the film so many times, and it's sort of in me, and then I don't think about it. I mean, in his book, he says, you know, he recognized that if you put your hands and turn them, your palms towards your thighs, that's how he stood.
Interesting.
You know, most people don't, so you can look like Cagney, but for me, there are some iconic movements that he does, hands and some of the style of dance, but in terms of playing the character... I really just try to take his essence and then, you know, as you would on stage, listen and react. And the one thing I will say early on, the sort of home base for me, if you watch him in films, the sort of what I've boiled it down to and tell people and shared with Freddie early on when he was coming into the project is if you watch him on film, he always has a forward energy. He looks like he's either going to hit you or kiss you.
He's never set
that's
back
how
on
I
his
define
heels.
He literally looks like he's going to hit you or kiss you, and that's how he is. And I think his song and dance and his style of dance influenced greatly how his physicality was as a gangster and all those things. And no one moved like him. You know, no one fought like him.
Yeah.
And so that was my home base. If I ever felt like I needed to... you know, sort of re-engage with the character, I just sort of lean forward, went on the balls of my feet and leaned forward and all of a sudden put my hands like that and
you're
all of a sudden
Cagney.
You're Cagney.
Well, you know, speaking of characters, I mean, you have an amazing cast up there on that stage.
Unbelievable
that
cast.
Playing multiple
so
characters.
So fortunate to be on stage with those
people. Give them a little shout out there?
Yeah. I just go down the list. Like, I mean, Bruce Sabbath, who plays Jack Warner, is wonderful. He's been critically acclaimed for this role since he started and is the perfect foil.
He really is.
In terms of the antagonist in the story. And it's really fun. You know, the main scene that we flash back is them backstage at the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Awards, where in our telling of the story, it's not really accurate, but Cagney didn't know that he was coming to introduce him, and that's
it. May not be historical, but it's definitely accurate, because I felt those feelings must have been conveyed between.
Exactly.
It was interesting to watch.
You know, an artistic representation of what was real.
Right. That's absolutely true.
And then we have four other characters in the show who all have home base characters. For example, Ellen Wright plays my wife, Willie.
Brilliantly, Lord. She's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when she came into audition, she's been with the cast as long as me. She's the only one. Like, she played my wife in 2009 in our premiere in Florida.
Wow.
And she came into the audition, and well, you saw how darn cute she is.
And she stands up to you, no doubt about it. Oh, I mean, she is Cagney's
perfect
foil,
too. And she's like a little shorter than me, and I'm short. And she came in the cute little period, like shorts and a shirt and her hair done up, and I was like, oh my God, I hope she's good.
Right.
Because she looks so
perfect.
Please
be able to act.
Yes. And she could. And then,
it's great.
Oh, great. She's a great dancer. Fantastic. Well, she sings great, thank God. Oh, and she's a great actor. Okay, so she's been with me ever since. I mean, she's perfect. And then Danette Holden, who's done several Broadway shows, she plays Ma Cagney and Jane, and is just hysterical. And again,
very funny.
Phenomenal tap dancer. Yeah. They're all phenomenal tap dancers. And I think she has like 21 costume changes in the show.
Yeah.
And, and then Jeremy Benton, who plays Bob Hope as his main character in many, many other things, Schlotsky and all those things, probably one of the best Broadway tap dancers there is.
Like, he was amazing.
He's widely known as the best. And then Josh Walden, who plays my brother, and a bunch of the tough directors, and is so versatile. I mean, he's like growly, tough, da da da, and then he's, you know, sort of flamboyant at various times.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So it looks like there's 50 people on stage, because that's kind of what they play, those four people, and we tap our butts off. And one of the great things, being out of town, we have, who's sitting right here, and you're going to talk to him in a minute, Freddie Kimmel, who stands by for Cagney and for Brother Bill. Who, when we were in New York, you know, I think we did 502 performances altogether, and Freddie did 10% of those, you know, and had to step in it at various times with very little notice. And
for both roles, too. That's amazing. Those
roles.
Are both large roles to handle, yeah.
Well, Hugh, I mean, it's I don't leave stage for more than about 12 minutes during the course of the evening.
I was going to say, you're there all the time.
To be on standby it's like being on standby to climb a mountain, you know what I mean? And when you're not doing it every day, it's, you know, I have the easy job because I'm, you know, I'm in the flow of it, but it's a tough thing. And Karen Hyland, all veteran performers, Karen Hyland, who covers both women, and Tim Falter, who covers Bob Hope, who's an amazing tap dancer himself, and they all are. We got the cream of the crop, everybody made themselves available to be here for this LA run. So,
well, and as your producer said, Ricky Kane Larimer, that she wanted this show to be seen in two places, and that was New York and Hollywood, which of course makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even our engineer that is sitting in another room, when you walked in, said to me, because I was talking to him, that's the guy from TV. That's the guy that's playing Ken. Right? So, I mean, it's out there.
Yesterday, I was in Beverly Hills at a restaurant called Nosh. I ran in to get a sandwich to go.
New sponsor.
Tell them the sandwich was great. But I walked in. I said, okay, now this feels good. I feel like I'm in Hollywood. Because I was walking up to the counter, and a guy reached out of his booth and took my arm, and he said, Cagney. And
nice.
I was like, in the military, I was like,
nice.
Yeah, I said, yeah, I'm playing it. He said, I saw it. I was there at your first preview. And he went on and on. It was very, very sweet. And he said, I guess he wouldn't mind. He said, I'm Don Rickles' nephew.
Oh, my.
You know, with someone
in
Hollywood.
That's fantastic.
And my dad my uncle would have loved your show and went
on. That's a great compliment.
And then
goodness.
I was up ordering my food, and he came up to tell the cashier, you know, you should see this guy. He just blah, 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 blah. And I was like, this is happening in the middle of it. I was very excited.
My goodness. Well,
I just thought that was a fun little.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
We're in Hollywood. It's
this
great.
Project
right.
has some
I mean,
really
this is
cool
a place
stuff.
When you go to the supermarket, you're in
right.
You can be in line
yeah.
with you know someone very famous.
Yeah.
And
oh, and at our opening, we had
Reba McEntire. That's happened to me with her.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We had it was like old Hollywood is all coming out to see the show. We had And we had, like, in New York, right, Freddie, we had so many people. Fred Willard came twice in New York, and he showed up at the show the other night.
Wow.
And he's the nicest man. Yes, he and his wife,
he is
oh
a very nice
gosh.
Man, yeah.
He sat in that chair so where you excited. Are, sir, just
what
about a year ago.
And Norman Lear came a couple times in New York and brought his family, and he's coming again out here, and I'm going to have a meeting with him. And just, you know, it's such an honor to meet these people yeah. who have been in it. You
well,
know?
I should tell the story. I sat down next to Michael last night, and we had a friend there as well, and behind us a woman was talking, and she was an older woman. She says, well, you know, I'm obviously of age. She says, I'm getting to the age where I can barely see the stage. And the man sitting next to her goes, well, it doesn't really matter. You're probably one of the few people in the audience who knew Jack Warner and knew Jimmy Cagney. And I remember thinking, wow, in Hollywood, you really do have that advantage.
It's the real. So. They're not kidding.
That's right.
It's not a euphemism. It's
that's
like,
right.
No, I actually knew him.
One of the elements that I liked the most was the fact that, and this was a very cinematic script, as it needs to be for a film star like that, including parts where they would go over the writing of scripts that Cagney oversaw or Warner mm-hmm. oversaw, using the device of tap shoes to simulate the typewriters, which I thought was brilliant, and mm-hmm. it was accessible, and it was very palpable. To get that feeling of a writing room trying to come up with these log lines, and okay, this is what the story's going to be about, and here's what we're going to do, and it made the time pass so quickly. And this film on the backdrop as well, with white heat and all these iconic images that Cagney created, how much did you have to resist putting more and more clips in from Cagney's films or putting that up on the back screen to keep it as a full theatrical experience?
I was very clear. This came from me early on when we were doing the project and thinking about various ways to tell the story, that I didn't want any video clips of
him
James Cagney, because listen, I love playing this role. I love that man. I'm totally inspired. But no one is ever going to be James Cagney.
Yeah.
If you want to see the real thing, you watch a movie, right? We're telling a story about yeah. his life. So there's no way I want people to be looking at that and then having to look at me.
Yeah.
In this, they're able to escape, you know, like into and come along with this ride, and people are nice enough to say they feel like they saw Cagney for real sometimes. But
do.
If they saw
yeah.
clips, they wouldn't feel that way.
Right.
They
but
think, oh, we saw a guy
like
playing
yeah.
Cagney, right?
True, you're right.
But
right.
I can portray it enough that they think that was what he might have moved like or looked like in real mm-hmm. life, you know? And that is, I think, a much more satisfying theatrical experience.
Absolutely.
Well, the man is James Cagney, and the show is called Cagney the Musical, playing at the El Portal Theater here in North Hollywood. And, of course, the easiest way to get tickets is to visit the website, which is, of course, www.cagneythemusical.com. Is that correct?
And
correct.
And we should add, it's playing at the main stage Debbie Reynolds Theater. And that's
right.
Something that
newly named.
They recently
newly
named that, yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of fun, too.
Very,
I like
and, you
that.
Know, and then
yeah.
we have the smaller theater in that complex is the Marilyn Monroe Forum Theater.
Oh, great. I stuck my head in there. That's a great little
it
space.
Is a great space.
Marilyn Monroe used to go to school at the elementary school directly behind the theater.
Oh, wow.
When she was a kid, and Debbie Reynolds used to ride her bike to that theater, and so many stars, you know, from all the studios when they were kids came to that theater. That was the only movie theater in all of this whole San Fernando Valley.
Oh, wow.
And then it transferred to, a vaudeville theater briefly.
Many, many
that
things.
Sort of thing,
yeah,
and eventually into a full performance theater. Yeah, and they do great work there, of course. But I was saying before, this show really was a nice fit for that space. Every seat is a great seat in that house, and it's a very pleasing show. We sometimes do avant-garde shows on this, on State of the Arts. We feature them, and we like to see those shows, too. This is a show that if you go to, you're going to leave feeling great.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of angst to where you leave feeling like, okay, now I got to go out and deal with the real world, too.
And
you feel very good about Cagney.
I think with all the, we were just talking on the way over here, the stuff that's going on in Puerto Rico, I mean, everywhere.
Right. Northern California as well.
I mean,
that's right.
The pictures in the paper today of those homes that are nothing but, you know, nothing's going to, you know, that's tough stuff, and it's happening, and it's tragic. I do feel like as an actor, as performers, that we're doing what we're supposed to do right now, and, you know, people... You think you're purposeful living. I feel like right now I'm putting something good into the world that people can come and really just be there and leave with their spirit uplifted. So we're very – I wish we were here longer. You know? I wish we were here for 2 months, honestly, because one of the great things that's happened with our show wherever we've been, right from the – almost at every – all but one theater, and that was in Canada where it had a good run, we've broken box office records.
Wow.
First place we played in Florida, we broke their 5-week box office record and extended. We did it at the York Theater in New York, where we started before a commercial run. And the reason I'm saying that, just to sounds like I'm bragging, but just excited about it as a co-producer. But
rightfully so.
But my point is, word of mouth is this is why it's happened. That was what I was going to say. So the longer we're in a place, the better it does, because people say, "Oh my God, I had such a good time.
Yeah.
You need to go."
Well,
tap dancing
and another reason people are going to have a good time when they go see the show is if they have the fortunate pleasure to perhaps see our other guests.
That's right, and we should definitely bring him in. He's been waiting patiently for us. I don't like him. He's wearing a better hat than I have. Not cool. Yeah,
he's always in a hat.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is a theater veteran who has performed all over the country. He was Marley in the North Shore Musical Theater Company's production of A Christmas Carol, as well as appearing as Scuttle in their production of Disney's The Little Mermaid. He appeared as Fop in the Broadway national tour of Phantom of the Opera and understudied the role of Tony in the national tour of Billy Elliot.
He played the role of Houdini in Ragtime with the Milwaukee Rep and was Chip in the Lucille Lortel production of On the Town. He has appeared on ABC's Forever and is currently appearing in Cagney the Musical, as we have been discussing, on stage now at the El Portal Theater through October 29th. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for this man, Freddie Kimmel.
Welcome, welcome.
I am so happy that you are in this show, Freddie, and I'm very inspired by your backstory.
Oh, my backstory.
Your backstory.
That's such a loaded question.
Yes. Not that backstory, the one that's accessible on radio.
Yeah, you made it through that jail time, and you got
that's
out,
right.
And you
exactly.
really
from
changed
former
your life
stripper to the Broadway stage.
No, I mean, first of all, this... He's. I've looked at some of his stuff. You're very, very talented, and you have to be in a show like this, for goodness sakes. And something happened to you in the middle of your Broadway career that changed your life for other reasons and perhaps for the better, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I'll try to make this really short. I've gotten really good at talking about this. So, you know, I'm in New York, and I'm pounding the pavement. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing show after show after show. And like Robert said, you work really hard to crack the nut. You're trying to get on Broadway. So it usually is up this flight of stairs. You know, you do a better show
right.
and a bigger role with a better producer, and your world expands. So I had just booked my first production contract at the Kennedy Center. I was supposed to go do Carnival, directed by Bobby Longbottom. And I was so excited to do this production. And just really, you know, your head sort of spins with what's next, what's going to happen for me. In the midst of that, while I was working on another show, my stomach started to hurt one night. And I ignored it for a little while, and I just push through the pain like every performer does.
Sure.
We're used to pushing through sore joints and hurt knees and bad backs.
Right.
Because your body hurts as a tool, right?
And the show must go on.
The show goes
That's
on.
Right.
So I pushed and pushed and pushed. And finally, one morning, I could barely stand.
Ugh.
And I went to the... I did not have health insurance at the time.
Ugh.
I went to a free clinic, what they have all over New York. It was called the Ryan Chelsea Health Clinic. And for $25, you can go see a doctor. So I went into this doctor who said, you know, we discussed my symptoms. I said, my whole stomach hurts. I think there's this, I had found like a lump on one of my testicles. But, you know, to be honest, am I going to talk about testicles right now on the radio? I guess we are.
Okay, but our rating just skyrocketed.
Okay, so, you know, it's not like, it's weird to talk about, but it's not like something that you're not shaking hand, you're not touching your elbow every day. So, you know,
well, it depends on the person, but I hear what you're saying.
That's correct. But so to become familiar with this testicle, you're like, is there something different there?
Right.
Is there not? Am I crazy?
Plus, so you're this, embarrassed to talk about it, which
yeah,
is a hard
it's
thing.
Not something you talk about. And I had mentioned it 2 weeks before in the dressing room.
Wow.
I had said, I was like, do you guys ever have a little bump on your testicle? And everybody laughed. And
Nobody saw that as a warning sign.
No. Wow. You know, it was kind of like, I'll check it for you.
Right.
You know, one of those type of things. It was because you have this jovial relationship with your fellow castmates, as you do in theater. Everybody's naked all the time. That's just what it is. So I had went into this doctor's office, and this practitioner looked at me, and she said, you know, it's probably an infection. I'm going to give you some antibiotics.
Wow.
I said, great. Let me get these antibiotics. Get out of here. Get on with my life. And she popped her head back in the door. 2 minutes later, she said, you know what? I'm going to refer you to the emergency room.
Good for her.
Because I just want to be sure. I can send you up there for $5. You know, you'll be covered under this umbrella policy coming from a free health clinic. So, okay, I'll go. So after I'm at this, I went up to St. Luke's at the time, which is no longer there. It's been bought out and sold and transferred to another, a different medical group. But I'm sitting there and, you know, I see a urologist and I get a scan and I go see an infectious disease guy and they're passing me along and I'm there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Finally, they stick me in a room. And the hospital is overcrowded. I mean, there's people everywhere. Wow. It's the worst idea. I grew up in upstate New York, so, you know, if you can imagine a Norman Rockwell-type situation, medical care, that's what I know.
And this ain't it in New York City, right?
in Midtown Manhattan, this is not it. At that time. They plop me down in a room, and my head is spinning. I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
And I have this doctor walk in with this team of medical students. And without talking to me, he opens up this chart and he says, this is a man representing a case of advanced testicular cancer.
My goodness.
It's probably metastasized somewhere in his body.
And you hadn't heard any of this yet?
None of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is why he's experiencing so much extreme pain. And then it was just like, oh, this, I heard pain, pain, pain. And literally, just like a movie, these waves of sound started washing over my body. I heard nothing.
Wow.
Heard nothing. And I don't remember where Tom went. And I just remember, you know, my hands were sitting there. I'm shaking. And I looked up at the guy and I said, did you say cancer? And I could not believe it. I said, everybody needs to get out of the room.
Wow.
Everybody. I said, actually, you can stay. What are you telling me? So he handed me this piece of paper and a dot matrix printer that said, you have cancer.
Oh, my.
With asterisks all over it. I just started crying all over the page.
That's disgusting.
And I ran out of the hospital I got my cell phone. I went to call my dad. Ding, ding, ding. Your cell phone has been turned off because you have not paid your bill this month.
No.
You have a balance to AT&T. So I had to call AT&T, and I had to ask them to reinstate my plan. I said, listen, you know, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. Can you please turn my phone back on?
Wow.
And of course, this woman flipped my phone back on.
Oh, that's great. Wow. AT&T.
Go AT&T.
Man.
I am still with AT&T today. If you would like to reach out for me for this story.
That's an amazing.
I'm happy to tell it. Yeah. It was a beautiful human moment. I called my dad. He said, get on a plane. And I flew home to Rochester and... you know, I went. I'll sum this up quick. You know, I found a doctor at the University of Medical Center, and they took me right to the emergency room. I was in so much pain.
Right.
They operated on me that night. They took out the primary tumor, and you know, I sat down the next day with my doctors, and I said, I really have this big show. I've been cast in Carnival at the Kennedy Center. If everything goes great, in 3 months, can I be dancing in Washington? He said, you have another job right now.
Get well.
Life's on hold.
Yeah.
You're going to beat cancer, and you'll get back to it.
That's a good doctor.
It was a great doctor.
That's
so,
right.
You know, and it was a massive undertaking I had when they looked in the meat of it. I had 9 tumors in my chest.
Oh, my goodness.
Wrapped around the vena cava going to my heart, my kidneys. You know, I did as much chemo as you could possibly do for this type of cancer, testicular cancer. I did four rounds, 5 days a week for 5 hours a day.
Wow.
I did a massive surgery where they opened from my pelvis to my chest,
ugh,
took out all my organs, put everything back in, and they close you up. Yeah. It's called a retroperitoneal lymph node dissection.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Retroperitoneal lymph node dissection.
We got to write a song about that. My goodness. Well, this is amazing because not only did you come back strong, but you came back with an amazing lust for life as well, correct?
Yes.
I mean, you've worked nonstop since you came back.
Nonstop.
Amazing.
Cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was this great liberator of any fear that I had about a casting director or an audition or or a scene or any of this mentality that... the victim mentality that I think a lot of actors fall into, that why is this happening to me?
Wow.
And life is really happening for you. Whatever the adversity or whatever the challenge is, it's all happening for you. Whether it's you know, an emotional trauma, whether it's a rough relationship, a difficult audition, whether it's something really big like cancer or the people in Northern California that are dealing with these horrible fires or, you know, the tragedy in Vegas. But in all those things, you're never a victim. It's always a lesson of growth. And I think those lessons keep happening again until you choose to learn it.
I've been through this twice with former clients of mine, very longtime clients of mine, Scott Hamilton, the great Olympic skater, and Lance Armstrong.
Yes,
of course.
And Lance had his after Scott, and that's how Lance and I met, was because of Scott's cancer and the comeback that he made. His happened exactly like yours did. In the middle of a performance
on the roll on the gurney ride into my surgery. My doctor handed me his book. And he said, read this.
Wow.
And I read that book. Yeah. I woke That's up, amazing. I read that book. That I read that book story? In 2 days.
Wow. Yeah.
And I have, look at this, I have Live Strong tattooed on the inside of my arm because I looked at that man as a hero and a light, and he got me through so much stuff.
Amazing.
Because reading it and seeing his attitude, I knew I could do it.
Yeah.
And I knew going forward that I would take all this stuff I learned and I would pay it forward as a responsibility of survivorship. And you know, when I get into a show, I am so inspired about the food I eat, about the meditations in the morning, about connection with the body, about, you know, art as a form of healing energy, that I infectiously want to spread it to the cast.
And he does.
And you have.
I can speak to that.
That's right.
Freddie is a guy who, you heard the story. It's a dramatic thing, but the reality, the outcome has been a guy who is a light among the cast, who pays it forward with his generosity of knowledge, because he's a health guru now, well-read and knows about, you know, the ins and outs of vitamins and nutrients and food and whatnot. And he came to my house and cooked breakfast for my wife and kids to show us a new.
But now I'm into research. I need you to do that for me, just for research purposes.
How do I get in?
That's right.
And guys, we're here for a month. We can set something up.
That's right. Thank goodness for a long run. Yeah. I like that.
And in terms of this role, I mean, you need someone. And he, you know, when he has to play it, he's got to be ready to go physically because it is like running a marathon.
Exactly.
And for me, as a guy who's not 25 anymore, to be able to do it 8 times a week in New York and do it now, I needed someone. I mean, it was really, there's no accident that Freddie and I, we worked together years ago in Houston, 2005. We worked
2005
together in Houston in Anything Goes.
Yeah.
How did I not find that on your credit?
Yeah, that's right.
Back and look.
And just for a month at Tuts in Houston, and would sort of cross paths periodically on a corner in the city and be, you know, give each other a hug and be happy to see each other. But there's no accident that we are doing this together now. Yeah. I feel very grateful. So. Yeah.
Well, I got to ask you one quick question here. I brought a friend of mine who's a screenwriter to see the show the other day. Your publicity people were very kind and got us a ticket there. And we sat and watched, and I was impressed by the writing. I thought the writing was so strong. What is the difficulty when you're embodying a real-life character, as you do with both the brother and with James Cagney? What kind of preparation do you have to do that's different from what you might normally do for a character that doesn't have a historical basis?
Well, I think Robert mentioned it. He gifted me the book, Cagney on Cagney. And he said, I want you to sit down, I want you to read this book, and you're going to hear the man's voice in your head.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see how he wrote, just how he spoke.
Yeah.
And it's really, I have went to that book, I read that book, I read it every single day before I started. Robert was doing Frozen, so I rehearsed the show in New York.
Interesting.
So I did Cagney that week, but every day on the bus ride to rehearsal, I read 15 minutes of that.
Wow.
And I would just get him in my head. You know, I'd start to envision. You can see all the in the chapters he talks about his tendons in his arms were shortened, so that's why his forearms rotated in from lifting weights. So you can imagine what it would be like to stand there like that with his hands interned. Or you can he talks about the guy on the corner who would tug at his pants.
Used in so many films, right? My goodness, wow, it's so iconic.
So that book has been an amazing tool, and then I think you know, I've had a great role model in Bobby. I've always looked up to Bobby as a performer. You know, I go see him in most of the things he's done. I saw him in Anything Goes as the is the purser. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then I saw him in Drood, and he's got such a wonderful physicality about anything he does in Sage, which you guys have seen. But he was a wonderful role model for just being really present and really available as a leading man and a leader of the company to be there to answer any questions and just really be a guide for me going into this role, because it's a beast.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's one thing to do a role like this. It's an entirely another thing to be in the theater ready to do it for 2 hours and 15 minutes where you don't leave the stage. You don't stop talking. You don't stop singing. And you don't stop leading the ship. You know, it's a very different experience. I can honestly say, as far as relating it back to health, when you finish doing this show and you're in that center spot and you've done your last tap dance and the band goes bump, bump, and you just reach up and grab the sky and pull it back down, and the line is, "I've made it, Ma, top of the world."
That's great.
You feel like you are this ball of energy and light and healing purity. I've never felt so high in my life. And I never knew performing could make me feel that good as doing this role. And that's why for 15 months I sat in the basement of the Westside Theater and waited for those 50 opportunities to do it. 50 times.
And you never once tripped Bobby to try to get him to break an ankle, huh? Because that seems like a role that would just be a plum role for you. You both have such a wonderful energy and both a positive way of looking at this character.
Yeah, if I didn't like the guy so much, right? I could see that happening.
But Tanya Harding him.
Exactly.
Well, I got to tell you, so you have a cast album, too, available, correct?
Yes.
It's available on iTunes?
Yes.
Okay, well, we're obviously going to try to get people to know a little bit more about that, because it really is a great... There's some beautiful ballads in here, as well as some really great tap numbers as well, which have such a wonderful bit of music behind them. If people Google Cagney the Musical iTunes, that'll pop up, correct?
That's correct.
And are you on Amazon as well, other music services?
Yes.
Great.
I think we're in everything, right?
Yeah. Well, we will obviously encourage our listeners to go do that. I'm going to go ahead and cut the famous segment that we do, the embarrassing moments here, because I think the words that you said are so true. If you can beat cancer, there's nothing you can't get through.
Yes.
And I think that's something that every performer needs. So you guys are off the hook. I want you to know you're off the hook for embarrassing moments.
For embarrassing stories.
Right.
I'll say this one thing. I do write all these... speed bumps in life, or these challenges that come along that continue throughout living a life post-cancer, I post on a website called Freddy Set Go. And
I'm sorry, say that again.
Freddy Set Go.
That's Freddy is in your name, of course. F-R-E-D-D-I-E.
Yep. And I just post, you know, whatever it is for the week. Maybe it's a meal that's an anti-inflammatory meal. Maybe it's a new guided meditation. Maybe it's a doctor in the New York area that's helping people with integrative medicine work on the side effects of chemotherapy. But I just continue to write and pay that forward. I try to, you know, do a post a month, but there's quite a collection on there now, so it's going strong.
Well, God bless you for that.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think we might have a little time for the segment. Let's get to this piece of music that.
So this is from the cast album of Cagney the Musical, and the song is the finale from Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. A Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam. Born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the point. I am that Yankee Doodle boy. I'm the kid that's all the candy. I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy. I'm glad I am. So's Uncle Sam. I'm a real live Yankee Doodle. Made my name and fame and boodle. Just like Mr. Doodle did by riding on a pony. I love to listen to the Dixie strain. I long to see the girl I left behind me. That ain't no Josh. She's a Yankee, by gosh. Well, say, can you see anything about a Yankee? Oh, that's a pony.
I'm a Yankee. Can you
obviously a great thing, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, what an amazing, amazing cast album. What an amazing cast. Real quick, where can people find out tickets for the show again?
Well, if they go right to CagneyTheMusical.com, there's everything you want to know about the show and clips and interviews and articles and a big button that says buy tickets, and you'll find us at the El Portal till the end of October.
Fantastic. Debbie Reynolds' main stage, ladies and gentlemen. That's beautiful,
right.
Beautiful
yep.
theater.
Can't recommend it highly enough.
And you can find
really
us at Cagney Musical everywhere, like Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, Cagney Musical, and then the website is Cagney the Musical.
And plenty of performances remaining through October 29th. So this is something we always say on this show. Get away from that television, put down that remote, get in the car, take your children, and go support and see live theater of any kind.
That's right.
Can I mention one
of
thing?
Course, please.
We have random, because of a Saturday booking that was already there, we have a random Friday matinee tomorrow.
Wow, fantastic.
Which is such a fun thing to do. When are you going to go get to see a professional, you know,
exactly.
musical, New York musical on a Friday afternoon?
That's
so
right.
2 o'clock tomorrow at the Up Hotel, and then the final 2 weeks. Weekdays are the best time for tickets. Our weekends are selling out very quickly. If you want to go on a weekend, you better hurry
Absolutely.
For your tickets. The weeknights, you can still get some good seats.
Good so
stuff.
Lots of street parking around there. The Federal's right next door. We encourage you to stop
yes.
by, grab a bite to eat, go see a great show,
yes.
Cagney the Musical. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave you with this. Michael, where do I see you next
Actually,
week?
Actually, no, we're going to do our little segment.
Do you want to do it?
The embarrassing
yep.
segment?
All right.
Yep. Oh, geez. Freddie will go first.
Let me give you
No,
hold on. If we have time
so
for this, I've got
to
give
We have to introduce it, though.
This
okay.
is our, now, keep in mind, gentlemen, we spent millions of dollars on this one soundbite here, so you got to
okay,
be prepared
ready.
For
I'm
it.
I'm ready.
All right.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Very nice. So now keep in mind, that's our entire technical budget for the entire year.
And you underscored it with part of our cast
I'm
album.
I'm going to pay royalties on that now, I
that's
think,
right.
too. So do you guys have a moment? What we do is we tell performers out there who might be listening, young performers who might be listening, how things can go wrong and yet you can come back and get through it. Very much like what we talked about with Freddie on a much larger scale, obviously, but on a small scale too, the daily stuff. Tell me something that's happened to you in your career that kind of changed the way you looked at auditions or performances.
Go ahead. You want to go?
No, you go first.
Well, I'll tell you a Cagney-related one. First opening night, or not our first opening, opening night of one of our productions in Canada. It was the second ever production that we did of Cagney. I put on tap shoes on stage, and before we do the big Bob Hope, James Cagney tap duet from Seven Little Foys. It's kind of iconic in the films. The choreography is slightly different, but it's a big tap challenge between Bob. So I put on my shoes. I started to tie my shoes, and my lace broke.
Oh, no.
Lace broke.
On a tap shoe.
On
oh
a
my
tap
goodness.
Shoe while I'm getting ready to do the big, big, big tap challenge of the evening. And so I literally relaced my shoe, made up
my
some lines,
goodness.
Kept chatting as if I was James Cagney to Bob Hope. Ah, meditate. Bob, those are hot days. Da, da, da. And I relaced my shoes, and he says, are you almost ready there? Jimmy, and, and then we did the tap duet, and then at one point, I mentioned about blowing a tire,
right?
You know, as if during the thing. Anyway, that wasn't so embarrassing because it turned out
it could
great.
Have been a disaster.
Right. My best embarrassing one, New York City Opera. I was playing Yegush in The Merry Widow, turned upstage to crawl through the legs of the grisettes, and I had a dance belt on, not the kind with the
oh,
full
no.
bottom, but the kind with the string up your butt, and my pants split in front of 3,000 people, and literally there it was.
And ticket prices skyrocketed that for show.
I know, they charged people extra
when
$10.
When I was a kid, I had that same experience. I was in musical theater, in the round.
Oh, gosh.
And I forgot to underdress.
No escaping.
Oh, no.
So oops.
That's how
yeah.
I,
Freddie, what you got for us?
Oh, God. There's a couple, but I'm gonna pick one. Actually, the last time I was in L.A., I was here with Phantom of the Opera at the Pantages Theater. And we had this, we did a special performance where James Corden came in and played a role in our show.
Yeah.
And the bit was, on James' show, he thought he was gonna come play the Phantom.
Wow.
Well, when he got into the theater, he learned that he would be playing Fop 1. So he would be playing my role. So for the night, you know, and of course they did up the, you know, the broom closet, like his dressing room, and it was
oh
very,
my.
Very funny. So for that performance, as a fop, you paint your face white. Do you know that scene
of
with
course.
Where she, Carlotta, you know, she croaks when she goes to sing and she coughs up the blood.
Spoiler alert for anybody in the one person who hasn't seen Phantom of the Opera yet.
I ruined it for the West Coast.
That's right.
So you have this huge makeup plot. So for that night, I sat in the dressing room and I didn't have to put on the plot because James took my track and he played Fop One. He goes out and he does his thing and, you know, he bowed at the end. It was a great bit. So the next night, I'm sitting down, I'm getting ready, and I'm in this headspace of, wow, I'm so relaxed, so chill. Got my costume on, I'm ready to go. I go up to the stage. I didn't put on any of the makeup. None of the white makeup.
That's important. You should have done that.
Oh, that's bad.
Oh, my
And I
goodness.
Sat down. I have 10 seconds. I get upstairs. They put on the wig, and I look in the mirror.
Oh, no.
And I just started to cry. I was like, what am I going to do? They're like, you got to go.
Right.
So I had to walk out, and, you know, they're just tiptoeing across the front of the stage on these little 8-bar solos.
He was a fop in recovery.
And, so. And I had to only imagine what the sold-out audience was looking at me, thinking, who is this screw-up that they put in Phantom of the Opera?
No, they thought, what an unusual take on that part. My goodness, that actor really tried something different. So.
Yeah, but you know, it was one of those things where it was like, you're so embarrassed, like my T-shirt was soaked through with
right.
sweat.
Oh, of course,
and,
just
and,
the
you know,
sheer terror.
You know, like you do in an equity production when you screw up like that, it's
right.
your own, you get a fine.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
But it was a good life lesson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked a lot about the things that can happen, but so many good things happen in this show, Cagney the Musical, and it's one of the things that you want to get out and see. Again, visit the El Portal Theater's website, or of course you can go to CagneyTheMusical.com.
And I must say that we've just had a little message handed to us that the first person who goes to our State of the Arts LA Talk Radio Facebook page and to say that they have listened to the show will receive a pair of complimentary tickets to the performance tomorrow, Friday.
Fantastic.
The matinee performance.
That is a deal, my friends. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you can contact us via private message or post publicly on our page, we'll give that away and we'll let you know via Facebook. So, Michael, obviously, this was a fun show and two
totally.
Great gentlemen. We want to thank you both for being here. Really a lot
oh,
of
yeah.
fun. Here's a little more music from the show. Now, we're going to let our audience hear this on the way out, but Michael, where will I see you next week?
On the radio.
I will look forward to it, brother. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That ain't no Josh. She's a Yankee, by gosh. Well, say, can you see anything about a Yankee? Well, that's a call.